Chapter 10 The Tests of the Horus Taskers. Lara stared at the eagle on the platform. It flapped its wings at her and made a squawking sound. She turned her head to keep an eye on the dark gatekeepers who crept towards her, then back again. She had to remember to keep the light flowing and through her head when she was distracted. The light dimmed a little and the dark gatekeepers came in closer. It was hard focusing on light and trying to get some direction. She was on the floor of the Great Pyramid where the dodecahedron gently moved above it. The eagle had been waiting for her. It squawked again and she slowly stepped her way over to it. It was a huge white bird with sharp eyes and a hard stare. It commanded her presence and she obeyed. As she approached the platform, the eagle suddenly transformed into a man. Lara stopped. He stood, arms crossed on his chest, legs solid and unbending in worn brown leather trousers. He wore a waistcoat with painted patterns, and feathered headwear sat around his face, falling down the front of his body to his waist. His creased, reddish-brown face was set with a hard expression, rather like the eagle's. He looked down at Lara, then let his arms fall to his side. "I am White Eagle." The man's voice was deep and strong. "I am your guide through the astral tunnel. You listen to me and you'll get through. You hear me, girl?" "Ah, yes, yes." Lara peered into the light at him. "Do you mind if I ask you where you came from? And, of course, where we are going?" "We are going to find the others. You have an important key to show them. The key of all life. They are calling you with their spirit, so you must find them. Will we see my parents and Noah?" Lara's heart beat faster. "Yes, if you do things right. And we also find the others too. But first they find other keys. This important. They must see they strong like you. They don't see they strong now. They must see this before you find them. Then all of you share the keys, share the story. Then you show them big key. Why do you say I'm strong, White Eagle? You are child. All children strong with power. The little child believe in everything until the parent make them weak. They believe in magic. When you grow to adult, you must always keep the child inside. Then you are strong always. You keep your magic. Where did you come from, White Eagle? Are you a Native American? Us Native Americans and all the other red people come from the stars. Our stars are called Seven Sisters Pleiades. You know these stars? My father points them out sometimes. He knows more than me. We come from there. There is one beautiful sun, El Chiun, and seven sisters were born from her. Six sisters be happy and healthy. The earth is our seventh sister. She is lost to us, she hurts and she cries, so we come to take care of her. The people of the earth have stopped loving her. They pollute her beautiful rivers. They throw rubbish into her green valleys and they dig into her heart to take out diamonds, gold and oil. Without love, the Earth Sister will surely die. We come to live here to show her love so she not die and the Earth people not die too. So how come you're helping me with this journey? When you and others find all the keys, the people of the world will learn about their power. Then, in time, they will begin to respect and love their great Mother Earth. You will see that all of you are connected here. White Eagle pointed to his heart. I help you, so I can help our great sister. White Eagle beckoned for Lara to get onto the platform. Come, girl. Now we follow the path of your father. Nick was tired out. Ali Mehmet lay in his cage like a great lump, whimpering like a baby. Nothing Nick said could persuade the old man to come out of there. He was paralyzed, he said. He's paralyzed with fear, Nick, the black sorcerer chuckled. What's so funny? Nick yelled now. He was frustrated with Ali Mehmet. Nick wanted to get his friend and himself out of this awful place, but the man wouldn't budge. He's funny. Can't you see that? He's doing this to himself. All the prisoners do it. They focus so much on what they are afraid of, they actually create it. And because they think they are powerless, they become so. The black sorcerer continued to chortle, his pink tongue pushing up against his ugly sharp teeth. Ali Mehmet. Nick cried again at his friend. We can leave here if we want. Look at the sorcerer here. He said we can go if we want to.
You're free to go.
What more do you need to hear?
No, Nick. They cheating me.
I run, then they find me.
Then they eat me.
Put me on fire.
Cook me.
Eat me.
They surely will not, Ali Mehmet.
That isn't how it works.
We can get light into our bodies.
Sister Abigail, the White Brotherhood, all the good guys say so.
But they stronger, Nick.
Much stronger.
They play with us.
We are not strong, Nick.
Not strong.
We must do as they say, or there is big trouble.
Ali Mehmet started making funny noises and carried on whimpering in between. He was losing his mind by the looks of it.
Nick sank to the ground, his head in his hands.
He had to get out of here, but he couldn't leave without Ali Mehmet.
You should go, my friend, the black sorcerer said, smirking.
He's given his power to me.
He's made me stronger, made my existence more meaningful.
Go.
They're all mine through their own choice.
The black sorcerer looked around him.
Nick looked up at him scornfully.
Don't blame me, my friend.
We all choose our thoughts.
What we choose, we experience.
Simple as that.
I am not the enemy.
Their thoughts are their own enemy.
Nick got up from the ground as the black sorcerer walked away.
No.
He wouldn't give up that easily.
He and the other Horus Taskers were all in this together.
This wasn't over yet.
Do you think we should choose a tunnel and walk down it?
Melissa stood, looking down the rock corridor.
They'd found tunnels running off it in all sorts of directions.
Or should we stay put? Maybe something will appear magically, who knows?
She shrugged.
I think we should stay here and focus or something, Hassan said unsteadily.
He wasn't sure about anything.
Noah scratched his head.
Tunnels, damn tunnels.
It's all so confusing.
I think we need a compass or whatever.
A bright light startled the three of them.
The corridor was gone. They were in a large circular room carved out of rock. It seemed to be moving ever so slowly. Round and round ahead of them were two men, guards of some sort. Each stood in front of an entrance to a tunnel.
There were no other exits to this place. Noah jumped up.
Who are you?
We are the Lords of Decision, one of the guards said pompously, his nose in the air.
The other one gave a great belly laugh, which started the first one off with the giggles, and then a fit of hysterics followed from them both.
Melissa, Hassan and Noah looked on as the two short pot-bellied men, covered in chain armor and holding metal staffs, laughed until their sides were splitting. They quieted down as Hassan's voice bled above their mirthful noise.
Excuse us.
Hello.
Excuse us?
You're excused, said the second guard, and the two of them started the whole thing off again.
This time they fell to the ground, holding their sides, choking with hilarity.
Don't you, guard one tried to stifle a chortle, don't you want to go through the tunnel?
Don't mind us.
We're always like this, we like a laugh.
They giggled uncontrollably.
Which one?
Snapped Melissa.
Which what?
Asked the same guard. He took a deep breath to calm himself. His cheeks were pink from laughing and he wiped tears from his eyes.
He eyed Melissa carefully. She was sharp, this one not good for a laugh.
Which tunnel? She replied tersely.
Noah called this her school ma'am tone.
No one argued with it.
Not even Noah.
Hiccuping now, guard one got up and looked at Melissa sheepishly.
Guard two followed, straightening up his twisted chain bodysuit.
They glanced back at their respective tunnels and stepped back to stand in place.
They looked very serious now.
So?
Which tunnel?
Melissa demanded again.
Where are you going, ma'am?
The first guard asked politely.
He wasn't messing with this lady.
Where are we going, Hassan?
Noah?
Melissa turned to face her two companions.
To find Lara.
Noah said quickly.
To find the halls of Amenti?
Osiris?
Hassan inquired.
Aren't they the same thing?
Melissa asked them both. Finding Lara, finding the halls of Amenti?
Power and all that?
Noah and Hassan shrugged simultaneously.
Well, you could take this tunnel, Gartu said, pointing his staff down its long white corridor.
Or this one, said the other, indicating his tunnel with his thumb. But this one's better, who could go via the looping tunnel? It should give you time. No, guard one argued. He looked at Melissa. You should go straight there, but straight ain't straight, is it? The other interrupted. Wherever they're going, they can't get there straight, unless they change their minds. Guard two finished. Change our minds about what? Melissa asked.
About if and where you're going.
The straight path loops sometimes. Please. Melissa was confused. They looked at her cautiously. Melissa rubbed her eyes. Was the room moving around a little faster? We want to find Lara.
Which tunnel?
Can't I get a straight answer out of you two?
It depends which one she's down.
Guard one shrugged. Probably this one, the other guard said.
Don't you know?
Melissa asked irritably.
Don't you?
Guard two retorted, hurt by her tone. The room was moving much faster. Melissa tried to concentrate.
How should I know? How should she know?
Guard one snapped at guard two.
Lara knows, guard two chirped.
Then I know, guard one decided.
Know what?
Melissa asked. She's down this one, the first guard declared.
Or that one, is it your one?
He looked at the second guard confusedly.
I'm dizzy.
The room was spinning. Melissa couldn't find her thoughts. They were in a jumble. She turned to Noah and Hassan. They were holding their heads. The guards were prancing about merrily, waving their arms and trying to keep their balance. We've got to find Lara, Hassan.
Noah.
Get up.
Am I the only one trying to get sense out of these two?
Hassan bristled.
Ahem.
He cleared his throat and narrowed his eyes. He was dizzy too.
Which tunnel, please, gentlemen?
He sounded rather drunk.
H-I-W-C-H beer no oil on A-W-N-T.
The first guard said.
What did you say?
Noah asked, cocking his head to one side.
H-I-W-C-H beer no oil on A-W-N-T.
The first guard repeated.
Steepu what oil are, the second guard said, nodding seriously.
He clearly wanted to help them.
As,
the first guard agreed.
Steelalpu what oil are.
The room spun now at such a speed that all of them fell to the floor. The guards were laughing hysterically and clowning about in their woozy state, stop. Melissa had had enough. The spinning ceased and everything was quiet in the rock room. They all looked at each other.
I think Melissa began,
no.
I know that we had better make a decision.
She looked squarely at Noah and Hassan. Let's stop being confused about where we are going.
It's silly, because we really do know.
This is the lesson we have to learn. Being confused is an excuse not to make a decision because we are afraid of the astral plane. When we are confused, we don't have to do anything, like go down nasty tunnels and bump into dark gatekeepers.
Noah interrupted.
He was starting to understand. Melissa stood up and dusted herself down. Everyone followed.
Hassan,
Melissa asked, turning to him.
Ask your question again.
She turned to the guards.
We are ready to listen.
We will not confuse your words with our nervousness.
Give us the exact same answer, Hassan.
Hassan cleared his throat again.
Which tunnel, please, gentlemen?
His mind was clear.
Whichever one you want.
The first guard said, repeating himself quietly.
What did you say?
Noah asked, cocking his head to one side.
He couldn't hear him clearly.
Whichever one you want.
The first guard repeated.
It's up to you, the second guard said, nodding seriously.
He clearly wanted to help them.
Yes, the first guard agreed.
It's all up to you.
Seth held his breath as the black sorcerer led him through the thicket to the black caves. Seth didn't particularly want to go there, but the black sorcerer insisted. He said that if the custodians wanted an army of dark gatekeepers, then they could have them. Seth was convinced this bat guy just wanted to see his skin crawl when he saw their dwelling place, and his skin crawled very nicely. The place was dark. The caves were set in a wall of rock. In fact, These demon-inhabited mountain ranges surrounded the Ashen Forest. The Dark Gatekeepers were the border keepers. An occasional escapee didn't have a chance once they got to the foot of them if they weren't caught and eaten first. The ice-cold air that hung around the dark bleak rocks froze them to death. Shadows moved in and out of the caves. Seth held a low lit lantern the black sorcerer had warned him to use as little light as possible. Bats could see in the dark. Seth realized the black sorcerer didn't need any help whatsoever. As they moved further into the area, something brushed up against Seth's face. He jumped back in ghastly fright. It stank and was slimy. Holding up the lantern, he saw long poles stuck in the ground. Attached to them were strips of flesh strewn around. The grounds were bones. Some still had meat on them. Eyes glittered as they caught sight of their visitors, and a wave of garbled chattering swept through the throng of dark gatekeepers. They moved in to surround Seth and the black sorcerer, but kept a distance. They weren't happy with the lamp. The smell was unbearable. It came from the area and from the dark gatekeepers themselves. Rotten flesh, that's what they'd been eating. Some still had food around their mouths. Flesh clung in threads to their teeth. Others just stood there and slobbered gooey saliva that bounced a few times before it fell to the ground. Seth heaved, ready to vomit, but tried to steady his stomach by taking a deep stench-infested breath and holding still. If anyone could see his face now, they'd say he was as white as death. The dark gatekeepers listened to the noise coming from their dark master, the man with the crystal skull. They were being ordered to crowd the astral corridors. Big trouble was coming, and the man next to him needed their help. He needed many of them to come at once. The black sorcerer looked at the suffering Seth and chuckled, "Let's get out of here. You've got a battle to be getting on with." Seth quickly followed him out of that repulsive place. When they got back to one of the clearings, he broke away from the black sorcerer and threw up in the bushes. The black sorcerer looked on. He sighed to himself. Everything was changing. The prophecy was in motion and the custodians were unprepared. For now, that was, Seth, the black sorcerer knew, was full of surprises. He wouldn't be shocked if he managed to sort out these Horus taskers once and for all. But you never knew. Were the human ones capable of taking back their power? The black sorcerer smiled to himself. It would be interesting. Yes, it would be very interesting indeed. White Eagle thumped at the drum with a rhythmic movement. Lara wouldn't say that he was singing, rather that he was chanting in a sing-song voice. The drumming was making her feel peaceful. They were at a campfire and the sounds rose to touch the stars above. The air seemed to shimmer, and there slowly appeared in the night sky a circle of light. The drumming was doing something to her body. She felt lightheaded. It was as if her body was moving. She rose slowly from the ground to meet the circle of light. White Eagle was with her, yet she could still hear the drumming, moving through the portal of light. She found herself sitting on the wall of a great stone well, her feet dangling in the water, socks and shoes and all. White Eagle sat beside her and, facing them, stood a group of dark-haired men in white robes. They had kind faces and reminded Lara of the Seven Sages, the Masters of Time. "Welcome, Lara, and thank you, Brother White Eagle, for bringing her to us." Two of the men walked over to Lara and helped her off the wall. Her feet were sopping wet. They called themselves the White Brotherhood, and they'd met up with her father. The man who called himself Balthazar told her that Nick was in the Ashen Forest trying to rescue Ali Mehmet, who had somehow been captured by the Dark Gatekeepers. "You, Lara," Balthazar informed her now, "must go to the halls of Amenti. There you will be tested to prove you have the power to open up the great gates. Inside those gates resides Osiris, but shouldn't I try to help my father and Ali Mehmet first?" Lara asked. She was desperate to be reunited with her family again. "This is one way to help them, Lara. There is a great storm coming. The custodians of the portals are preparing for war. You need to build your power, for right now, the light of all the Horus taskers put together is not strong enough to fight them. You must go to the halls to find more light." Lara looked at White Eagle. "I wait for you, little one. This your test. You go alone now. It is important." Lara felt tears prick the back of her eyes. "Alone again?" Balthazar took her arm. "They need you, Lara. You're strong." Lara gave a half smile. "How do I get to the halls of Amenti?" "Come this way." Back in the forest, Seth sat at the head of the wooden table with his aides, the remaining nine custodians of the portals. They were grim as they discussed everything that had happened since Rainford had found the sacred white powder. They also looked as sick as he felt they'd dined on. Well, he wasn't going to think about it. He'd only just got his stomach settled from his little visit to the Dark Gatekeepers. Every now and again, as they talked, they sipped at their tonic. They were that ruffled they'd better be careful with their supplies. They didn't know when they could next top up their flasks. Strategy, Seth declared. Strategy. We have to work out a plan of action to stop these people getting to the portals. They're all over the place. I don't know how they're doing it. Those seven sages, Seth stopped to breathe. The masters of time, they started all this. They were sneaky, sneaky. May I suggest, Your Grace, the chief aide offered, that we barricade the halls of Amenti? Aren't they already guarded by dark gatekeepers and whatever? They are. There are a number of guarded gateways before they reach the great doors. But the point is, we never banked on this, did we? We never thought that anyone, let alone a whole crowd of troublemakers, could wander the corridors. We've been safe for thousands of years. I'll go and check it out myself, Seth declared. The chief aide was right. That place was the most dangerous. It was the place that, if opened, would change everything. This wasn't a job for these lowly servants of his. He'd feel safer sorting it out himself. Seth stood up to go. In the meantime, get those dark gatekeepers organized. I want this over with. And he looked around at them menacingly. Go easy on the tonic. Keep calm. Relaxed. We don't have further supplies on hand. Unable to believe his ears, Nick crouched in the thicket close to the group of aides. This was the enemy of the human race. These were the people the Horus Taskers were trying to overpower, whatever that meant. He recognized them from the Antiquities Committee and other offices jobs that looked ordinary, when in fact they had a whole lot more important tasks that they were officially responsible for. They were discussing the horrors of their problem. Lara, Noah, Ali Mehmet, they were discussing all of them. They were in deep trouble. From what he could hear, their world was falling apart and they were rapidly trying to fix things. It seemed as if one of their own men had turned against them. That made Nick smile. Yes, it was a bad sign for them. A great force hit Nick from behind. Before he could utter a sound, he fell headlong into the clearing right at Seth's feet. The table went silent for a moment as the aides stared dumbstruck at Nick gasping for breath on the floor. He had fallen flat on his stomach and couldn't get any air for a few seconds as oxygen finally found its way into Nick's lungs. The others started to talk wildly amongst themselves, looking down at Nick and then up at Seth, who had been ready to leave for the halls of Amenti. Professor Nicholas Rainford. Seth cried, pushing at Nick's shoulder with his foot. Now what a pleasant surprise. What brings a man like you to a place like this? Nick was more interested in finding out how he'd ended up on the floor. He looked over his shoulder. A sentinel bat stood in the shadows. Nick had been too engrossed in the conversation at the table to hear anyone sneaking up behind him. I said, Seth repeated to the distracted man lying before him, what a pleasant surprise. You'd be polite if you'd answer me, Rainford. What brings you to the Ashen Forest? Nick looked up. He'd hoisted himself to his knees, when two aides jumped away from the table, grabbed his arms and yanked him to his feet. He was still a bit bewildered by his fall. On second thoughts, Seth declared, don't answer me. I get the picture. You're on your troublemaking mission and you've found your way here as one of those unfortunate tests your people have to take. Tests they never pass, I might add. Seth pushed Nick back to the ground. Call a few of the sentinels. I want him locked up. Hostages are good. They make the enemy do what you want. Nick found himself trussed up in ropes in the middle of the clearing. He yelled in protest, but it did no good. The aides had surrounded him. As Seth gave them orders concerning where to keep him, the black sorcerer appeared from the darkness of the trees. Hey! Nick shouted at the man in the black robes. Aren't you going to do anything here? I serve your needs, Nick. Didn't I tell you that? But they're imprisoning me. No, Nick. This is your doing. I tried to teach you a lesson, but you wouldn't listen. What lesson? What are you talking about? You have to ask that. Oh, Nick, you really are in trouble. The black sorcerer looked at the scene before him and chuckled.
"Look at you all," he exclaimed, "what a shambles." With that, he walked away, leaving Nick to puzzle over his words, and Seth to wonder yet again what the black sorcerer was all about. Lara was distracted. The sky was golden. In fact, there was an unreal golden glow to this whole place. Not that anything else that had happened on the astral wasn't weird, at least the events had felt real. This was different. It was dreamlike. It gave her a funny warm glow in her body. Up ahead in the distance was a gigantic building. It was domed smooth. There were windows and light glowed from them. The glass seemed to Lara to hold in the light as if it was just bursting to get out. Was this really the home of Osiris? A path led up to the gates. It was a rough stone, no, a rough crystal path. Lara bent down to look closer. She knew it to be sodalite crystal, an indigo blue rock. Along with her mother, she kept a nice collection of stones like these. The path wound on ahead of her. Whoever had laid it didn't have a straight eye. It was crooked and messy looking, and some of the sodalite was jagged, jutting up dangerously. She'd better be careful not to trip over, but she stayed on it and started to make her way up to the gates. They seemed a long way. All of a sudden she sighed and stopped again, feeling unexpectedly tired. Oh well, however far they were, she just had to keep walking, and so she did, on and on and on. Ali Mehmet lay in his cage listening to the sounds of the ashen forest. His pounding heart had slowed to a normal speed. Perhaps it had got utterly fed up with beating so fast and was now on strike. Ali Mehmet chuckled to himself. Another scream pierced the air. He jumped in his skin. Another yellow flash. There were sounds of dragging bodies, shrieks and slurping. Earlier it had terrified him. Now, well, now he was getting used to the noises. He didn't feel quite as frightened. He was scared, yes, but not paralyzed like before. He moved his arm. Whoa. He leapt up, his head hitting the roof of his cage. He could move. There were sounds again, more of these bat people walking about looking for more blood to slurp. He hoped they wouldn't pick him. He lay quietly. His heart had started to thump a bit more in his chest, but he managed to stay calm. The bat people walked past him. When the clearing was quiet again, he sat up. It looked scary out there. He didn't know if he was brave enough to get out of the cage. In fact, the cage looked safer than any place outside of it. What would they do if they caught him? He was certain these other humans were food of some sort. The bats seemed only interested in their blood, but then what happened to the bodies he'd heard being dragged off? Maybe if they caught him, they'd feed him, piece by piece, still alive, to animals or other creatures. Perhaps they'd drink his blood dry, draining him of all life. What if they beat him senseless? Perhaps. What if? Maybe. Could. Would. Possibly. Probably. Might. Ali Mehmet cupped his ears. Geez. Sister Abigail was loud. His ears hadn't even rung first to let him know she was there. Of course your ears were ringing. You were too busy with your what ifs and your perhaps this and perhaps that. Are you listening to yourself, Ali Mehmet? Are you listening to all the reasons you are giving why you cannot get out of that prison of yours? But nothing. Everything you are saying is only possibility. Nothing is real until it happens. How about this? What if you actually got to escape? What if you bumped into a dark gatekeeper and scared the living daylights out of it? What if those bat people came to get you and you socked them good and proper in the teeth so they couldn't suck your blood? You might actually win if you take a risk. Huh, Ali Mehmet? How about winning? Do you fancy that? Yes, how about some positive thoughts for a change? Don't you know you can talk yourself into something, just as much as you can talk yourself out of it? It's just a choice. It's a choice? You can put good thoughts in your head and that makes you feel powerful. Or you can scare the wits out of yourself like you've been doing. Choose, man. Choose wisely. Before Ali Mehmet could answer, Sister Abigail was gone. She had a habit of doing that. She didn't like back chat. The wood was quiet for now. He sat with his thoughts for a long while until a noise in the thicket startled him. He eyed the trees warily. Someone was making their way out of the bushes. Was Nick back or was it the dark gate? No. He wasn't going to do that scary stuff anymore. Whoever it was, if they were nasty, he was going to put up a fight. The form crept toward him. His heart was thudding. Then it soared with joy. It was Melissa. Noah and Hassan kept going.
They'd created a picture in their minds of the halls of Amenti and they kept it in their imaginations as they walked. They didn't speak much because they knew that conversation would distract them from the image they were working hard to keep alive in their minds. Sister Abigail had spoken to Melissa, Hassan and Noah through the dreaming crystal and suggested that they split up for the time being. Nick was in trouble, she said, and Melissa had to find Ali Mehmet. She told all three of them to focus their minds on where they were going and to keep a picture in their heads. They'd have to concentrate hard, she reminded them, because they were not used to doing things like this. For a while, they'd traveled together in silence, concentrating, and the next time Noah and Hassan looked around them for Melissa, she was gone. They kept walking and focusing, and the tunnel seemed to guide them, somehow. They didn't think about which of the many corridors to take. It seemed as if the tunnels chose them. A sudden noise jolted them out of their thoughts. Silence, then again it continued. A low hum, no, a low droning sound up ahead. The rock tunnel was glowing with a low light. They looked at each other questioningly. Hopefully the tunnels were ending. They walked towards the light. They could see now it was moonlight and found themselves out in a desert area. There were rocks jutting out of the landscape and ahead, a huge mountain face leered at them. They walked on for a while until a group of jagged rocks blocked their path. As they walked around the huge cluster, they found themselves staring into the faces of a group of green men lizards. Before they could make any sound of surprise, a voice behind them made them jump. "You! What are you doing here?" Hassan and Noah turned to look into the popping eyes of Abdul Bakr. "Shouldn't I ask you the same question?" Noah answered, his eyes wide with amazement. "Or maybe not. You're probably here to make trouble, put the spanner in the works, typical. Don't I know you?" Hassan queried, looking in Abdul Bakr's face. "Aren't you the man from the Antiquities Committee?" "He's one of them, that's what," Noah answered before Abdul Bakr could. "He's somehow connected to Lara going missing. Snooping, spying, and now up to goodness knows what. What are you here for, anyway?" Noah swung round to see what this place was and what the men, lizards, were doing and who are this lot. "What are you all up to?" The lizard men stood around, not quite sure what to do. They didn't look friendly, but they didn't make a move. They'd been handling some sort of electronic equipment, in front of a large oval mud cave. Noah moved his body to get a better look into the cavern. A kind of see-through curtain, Noah's shimmering veil seemed to be suspended there. You, how dare you? I'll ask the questions, boy." Abdul Bakr stammered with fury at Noah's nerve. "I'm in charge here. I'm the new boss." "Boss of what?" "Boss of the Nosy Parkers. Are these the Nosy Parker Brigade?" "You didn't answer my question. What are you doing here?"
"You'd better be careful how you speak to me," Abdul Bakr shouted. He barged past Noah and yelled something in a strange language to the lizard men. Four of them moved towards Noah and Hassan, and before they could protest, both had their arms pinned to their sides and were being dragged backwards, towards a small rock outcropping. "Tie them with something," Abdul Bakr shouted. Noah noticed the man's flask poking out from the top of his shirt pocket. He glanced around at the other lizard men. They had flasks too, but they were put aside in the green leathery folds of skin at the top of their thighs. The lizard men failed to find anything with which to tie Hassan and Noah. They hadn't banked on holding hostages, so hadn't come with supplies. The prisoners struggled, but the lizard men were strong. "Their shoelaces," Abdul Bakr yelled. "Use their shoelaces." He sent two more of his people to undo their laces. Their fingers, if you could call them that, were clumsy, and Abdul Bakr ended up doing the job himself. He tied their hands, while all the time his eyes popped and steam escaped from his ears. When he finally got up, he was starting to shimmer in green waves, but he took a great swig of his tonic to steady his human form. Hassan was horrified by this sight, and Noah simply nudged him in the ribs with his elbow and said he'd explain. Noah knew the poppy. Ad man was ruffled good and proper. If he could wind his nerves up a little further, Noah knew he could get Abdul Bakr to end up as that nasty green slime he'd seen in the Great Pyramid basement, now. Abdul Bakr exclaimed, "I'll do the asking. What are you doing here? You're related to that buffoon of an old guard, aren't you?" Abdul Bakr was looking at Hassan now.
Don't you talk about my friend like that. Noah wanted to jump up and punch Abdul Bakr's lights out. Do you ever stop talking?
Abdul Bakr turned to Noah, his face twisted with disbelief.
If I had some tape, I'd stick it all over your mouth.
Ali Mehmet is my uncle, yes.
Hassan said, graciously.
Noah wondered how he did this polite thing.
And I am here with Noah because we are Horus Taskers.
I believe you know the story.
Abdul Bakr glared at Hassan, then at Noah, then he stomped off, came back and stomped off again. He didn't know what to do with them. No, what was he thinking?
Of course he knew. He'd summon some of the dark gatekeepers.
They'd know what to do.
He charged back over to Hassan and Noah, who were busy wriggling their wrists about trying to get out of their shoelaces.
I wouldn't bother with that lark, Abdul Bakr said triumphantly. By the time you've loosened the laces, the dark gatekeepers will be here, looking for dinner. With that, he marched off feeling really quite pleased with himself.
Melissa reached Ali Mehmet's cage.
Ali Mehmet. What are you doing in here?
Very good question.
He answered, beaming at his friend.
He pushed open the front of the cage and clambered out.
Melissa steadied him as he reached the ground.
They hugged, then Ali Mehmet grabbed Melissa.
Come now.
We go to trees.
Before somebody see us.
There we talk.
They ran for the trees as one of the prisoners screamed in despair.
The yellow eye flashed, just missing the pair.
They scrambled for the bushes and burrowed down quietly.
The eyes, Ali Mehmet whispered to Melissa, they everywhere.
And the bat people, I know.
I saw them.
Ali Mehmet.
Sister Abigail says Nick is in trouble.
Do you know anything about this?
But he here, Melissa.
First he come to me, he say I must come, but I afraid, I stay here now, I free myself but Nick not here.
I don't know where he go. I just know he speak to big man.
The man boss.
Very scary man. Ali Mehmet's eyes widened, I don't like to look at him.
Where is this big boss man, Ali Mehmet?
He here.
He boss of this ashen forest.
I don't know where.
We have to try to find Nick.
Perhaps this man took him?
I don't know.
Let's try to find Nick.
He try to help me, I try to help him.
Let's go.
The two of them turned and skirted the clearing, staying hidden in the trees.
Melissa hushed Ali Mehmet when he tried to talk.
She wanted to concentrate on Nick's face.
She was determined to find her husband.
Lara sat at the gates of the domed building, nursing her wound with some leaves she'd picked up along the way. The path had been long and winding, it deceived people. The castle had seemed close, until Lara had started walking. She'd walked and walked for what seemed hours. She was feeling exhausted, in fact, far more exhausted than she should have felt. She'd had to stop a number of times. Eventually, she'd fallen onto a jagged piece of rock in the path that had cut her knee. She cleaned it now, since she didn't know what else to do. The gates were closed and there didn't seem to be anyone around. And besides from the gates, another long winding path snaked its way up to a wall. With a huge iron door she'd sunk to the ground. No thanks, she couldn't face another one of those walks, not now anyhow. Maybe she should take a nap, she was so tired, wet, her face was wet.
Lara opened her eyes and she squealed in fright. Staring down at her was a huge lion. She fell onto her back, only to gaze into the eyes of another. They are harmless, Lara. Came a voice. She stayed on her back. They didn't look harmless.
They won't, can't hurt you. They were licking your face. That's how you awoke.
Lara sat up slowly, eyeing the lion in front of her. Perhaps the voice was right. The lion's eyes looked kind, powerful and kind. She raised herself to her feet and turned towards the voice. It was a woman, tall, dark. Was she going to have a baby? Was she pregnant?
I'm Isis, wife of Osiris.
The woman held out her hand.
You've reached the first gate to the halls of Amenti.
Lara allowed the woman to help her to her feet.
Sister Abigail and their masters have told me a little about you.
How many gates are there?
Lara inquired.
There are two.
To get through this gate you have to pass a test.
The next gate, well, let's see if you can get through this one first.
I have a test.
Now?
But I've just walked, it feels like forever.
The path tired you, Lara. It's the crystal spirit. It clears your mind. It clears it of old stale thoughts. I didn't know I had any.
Well, all humans do.
But the clearing makes you tired. You cannot get through the gates unless you are clear-headed. It also makes you fall into a sleep state, so you can see us. The lions pushed up to Lara. She slowly put out her hands to stroke their heads.
Come, Lara, follow me.
The woman led Lara to the large gates and the lions followed. The gates were closed. Lara stopped and looked to the woman to open them. She didn't look as if she could push them, and there wasn't anybody else around to do the job.
Well, Lara, don't you want to open the gates?
Open the gates?
Oh.
Lara looked at the woman, then walked up to the great iron railings and gave them a hefty shove. They didn't budge an inch. Then, Lara looked at the point that the closed gates met. Was there a lock on it? She studied the area closely. No, nothing. She turned back to the woman.
I can't do it.
They're too heavy.
This is your first test, Lara. You have to find a way to open the gates.
It'll never happen.
Lara spun on her heels to the sound of the booming voice. Everything here was so peaceful, so dreamlike, and now this voice, it cut through her body like a blunt knife. She'll never get through.
Lara recognized the man. He looked angry and dangerous. He was the boss of those men who'd kidnapped her.
Seth!
The woman exclaimed. She knew him.
Of course.
Wasn't he the brother of Osiris and Isis? The bad brother who was the dreaded enemy of Osiris?
Lara looked at Isis.
She didn't appear to be afraid. This comforted Lara. She didn't want to go back to Rainbow's End, or worse, be kidnapped again, this time by the Dark Gatekeepers. The lions crouched low. They growled dangerously at Seth. They won't attack him, Lara, the woman said. He's not in the same sleep state that you are. He can see us and speak to us, but that's all. He can't touch you. This area is sacred space. He and his type cannot get past these gates in the way that you are doing. You have to have a clear mind, and the astral plane, with all its strange tests, helps you clear up old ways of thinking. Seth and his people can only observe you and try to stop you with persuasion.
But what about if I wake up?
Yes, he can attack you when you are awake, but only if you do not pass your test. If the gates open, it means you know your power.
Then, he can't touch you.
He will not be able to match you. The only thing he can do is frighten you in some way.
If he scares you, you would lose your sense of power. Seth stood there smiling as the woman explained things to Lara.
Well, I'll give you some credit, girl, he said. How you got here? Well, those masters must have given you a good map, some pretty good instructions.
But this is as far as you go.
You came in time, Seth. The woman smiled. You can witness Lara's test. Seth rubbed his hands and grinned.
The test.
He knew that the white gatekeepers couldn't help these travelers. That was the joy of it all. They only tested these freaks, and most of them couldn't get through.
Good.
She'll never get through.
If she does, I'll give her my throne.
Lara stared at Seth questioningly. This whole astral story was a bit confusing in parts. It seemed a person got to where they were going with the mind. She'd figured that much out. But what about the gateway to the heavens? What was that all about? What was Seth doing here? How could he stop people from going through? She put her questions to the woman, but Seth answered. These are my astral corridors. I use them to trick the human mind out of going to the heavens when a person dies.
You made this place, this dimension?
He didn't make it, Lara, the woman answered, but he does his best to control it, and he's doing a pretty good job. This place is a natural place. When humans die, they are supposed to come here first to be greeted by angels and are then taken to the heavens. That's how it used to happen.
Then, the Earth had some visitors. You know the story. They wanted to make slaves, so they placed dark gatekeepers here, who frightened the human souls so much that they thought they had lost their power. Then the dark gatekeepers imprisoned them until living human women became pregnant and the old souls simply went back into new bodies. Now, the souls come here when they die, then go back into bodies as soon as a woman on Earth becomes pregnant, which is almost immediately. They do this before the dark gatekeepers get them. So we never get to the heavens? Lara understood things a lot better now.
Some people do, though not many. Some human souls have been told about this story, so they prepare themselves for the time that they are going to die. The ancient Egyptians are a good example of these people.
There are also people in the world now, who prepare for the dark gatekeepers. When they die, they know exactly how to beat the evil ones.
They learn how to pass the tests.
Yes, the test is to see if they have understanding of their power and also if they have the courage to use their power. Not all people pass the tests. Human beings get frightened very easily now. Much more than they did before.
Why don't the angels help them?
Because every human being, or living creature, has their own power. No one can give power to you and no one can take it away. What a bad person can do, however, is make you think that you do not have power. How does a bad person do that, then? By making you frightened. Fear is a strange thing. It is a voice in your body that tells you that you do not have power. An angel cannot give someone power. An angel can try to convince you, when you are afraid, that you do have power, but you have to believe it.
So if I am afraid of someone, it means I do not recognize my power?
Exactly. And you then do everything that the other person tells you because you are afraid of them. And that's why I rule the world. Seth announced proudly.
Nice story, isn't it?
Come on, now.
I'm looking for some fun here.
Let's see how much power you have, little Miss Horace Tasker.
You're not
even close to opening that gate. I'm looking forward to imprisoning you. Don't worry, I shall not allow anyone to eat you. You'll be my little caged pet for life. A souvenir of this momentous occasion.
I have to tell you, the woman told Lara, that Seth does not understand things the way he should.
He knows that he can make people fear him and make people his slaves, but he does not understand how it works. If he did, he wouldn't have to try to steal people's souls.
Why are you nice to him?
Because he is a soul too, who does not yet understand his power.
He only thinks he does because he is a thief.
One day he will learn and he will pass through these gates to the heavens.
Crazy talk, that's what that is.
Seth laughed.
Don't fill your ears with her nonsense, Lara.
Come on.
Get on with the test.
Try and open the gate.
Seth couldn't stand still.
He was practically hopping with excitement at the thought of hauling Lara off.
You've got 2 chances of success, Lara Rainford.
Fat chance and no chance.
When I'm done caging you, I'm going to barricade this place, get a whole bunch of the dark gatekeepers out here.
That'll finish this sorry episode for good.
Yes, the woman said, looking at Lara.
Let's continue with your test. It is time for you to show understanding of your power. Later, you will demonstrate it by using it. Now you have to find a way to open the gates.
Abdul Baker was nowhere to be seen.
Noah wiggled the shoelaces tied round his wrists, but they wouldn't loosen.
Hassan was too busy gazing at the cave to wiggle anything.
The lizard men had set up some kind of sound system and were twisting knobs to create various musical notes. He couldn't see into the cave, it was too far from where they were sitting to see what was inside.
Noah, stop that for a moment, Hassan said, looking at the boy as he tried to get his teeth around the laces.
What do you think they're up to?
They're making sounds with that machine, but it seems as if they can't quite get the right tone or something, Noah.
Noah gnashed away.
The laces were shredding under the pressure of his teeth.
He looked up suddenly, his mouth dripping with saliva.
Geez, Noah, wipe your mouth.
Hassan said, wrinkling up his nose.
Come to think of it, we haven't eaten since this journey began.
Are you hungry, Noah?
Because I'm not.
Nope.
It must be astral magic or something.
He wiped his mouth on his arm.
I've just thought of something, Hassan.
The older man looked at Noah.
When Lara and I were last in the Great Pyramid together, there was a humming sound. It messed with our heads, somewhat.
Then, Ali Mehmet talked about music and portals, so did some of the scrolls that my mum and I read.
I reckon the cave's a portal to some place when we were a bit closer,
I could see inside there's a veil of some type in there. It sort of sparkled and moved, and reminded me of a very thin shimmering silk scarf my mother has at home. Noah went back to his shoelace. He kept munching, it would break any second. Now Hassan watched the men, thinking, got it. Noah whispered loudly, he wriggled his wrists and the laces come free. He glanced over at the lizard men, who were not the least bit interested in their new boss's prisoners. Abdul Bako was still missing. Noah crawled closer to Hassan and started untying the tight knot that Abdul Bako had fixed. He pulled until it came loose. What now? Hassan asked Noah. The guy will be back with his gatekeepers before we know it. We need to get into the cave, Noah said.
The cave?
Once we're in there, we can get through the portal.
How?
If they're having trouble, they're a bunch of useless lizards. Noah's your man.
Follow me, Hassan.
Hassan followed Noah as he dodged behind various rocks. They made their way up to the great wall of mountain rock that held the cave. None of these lizard men had checked on the prisoners. They discussed the equipment. Some of them appeared to be arguing amongst themselves. Others made sounds with the machine while two of them peered into the cave to check if anything was happening. They're in and out of the cave, Noah. We'll never get in there. We will if we distract them.
But how are we going to do that?
Suddenly, there was a noise underfoot. The ground was vibrating, as if a mini earthquake was about to occur in the distance, behind a small mountain. Dust clouds flew up. Was it a small army of dark creatures marching in unison?
Hassan.
It's them. The dark gatekeepers.
We'd better do something. Abdul Bakr's returned.
Let's throw stones, Noah, over there. Throw them in the direction we were imprisoned. That should distract them. Hopefully, they'll think we're hiding in the rocks behind. They picked up stones from the ground. The lizard men were watching the approaching dark crowd with puzzlement. Noah and Hassan started hurling stones. A few crashed against other larger rocks and some bounced off the ground in all directions. One or two of the lizard men turned to look and see where the noise was coming from. As they did so, they suddenly started yelling something. The prisoners were gone. Three or four of them ran to the spot where Noah and Hassan had sat. Others stayed put, watching the show from their positions. Noah cursed the dark gatekeepers were approaching. There weren't as many as they thought. They just sounded like an army. Still, it didn't matter how many there were enough of them to eat Hassan and Noah in seconds. They couldn't find the prisoners. Now the lizard men near the cave budged. They bounded off after the others, scattering in different directions, leaving only two of them loitering at a small distance from the cave. One of them went to watch the dark gatekeepers while the other toyed with the machine. He wasn't having any joy. The ground was rumbling now, and he threw his hands up in frustration. He went to join his companion. The approaching crowd were not far. They sent ahead of them a funny smell, something rotten in the air. Hassan and Noah ran for the cave entrance. As they did so, one of the lizard men spotted them. He yelled to alert the two who were watching the approaching visitors, but the noise of the footfalls drowned out his voice. Inside the cave, Noah and Hassan encountered the strange veil. It really did look like a huge bluish semi-transparent silk scarf. They could not see what was beyond it. Hassan went in closer and put his hand in front of the blue shimmer. Nothing happened. He tried to put his arm through it. His hand and lower arm disappeared. There was commotion outside and Hassan pulled his arm back, looking at the cave entrance. Noah moved slowly away from it, his back to the veil. He and Hassan kept to one side of the cave where they would not easily be seen. A horrible smell was creeping in. The dark gatekeepers had arrived. There was a sound of shuffling feet by the entrance voices. Abdul Bako was yelling. Next thing they knew, he was there in the cave in front of them. Run for the veil, Noah. Hassan shouted.
There's no point.
Abdul Bako sneered. It acts like a blue silken void where nothing exists. You have to ask it to transport you. You have to speak to it with sound. You clowns wouldn't have a clue. Noah and Hassan edged backwards towards the veil. Two dark shadows loomed into view behind Abdul Bakr. I'll be here when you get back. There's nowhere for you to go. I have a hungry mob waiting. It is better to be devoured piece by piece than to run forever in blue nothingness. Noah and Hassan turned and lunged straight into a sea of blue waves. They ran until they couldn't run any more. Then they stopped. Nobody had followed them. It was silent and blue and empty. They walked further and further. They kept going for what seemed like a long time until they realized that they weren't getting anywhere. They finally stopped and looked at each other through the blue haze.
"What now?" Noah asked Hassan.
"I thought you had the answer," Hassan replied. Noah thought for a moment. "Well, I had the answer earlier. Let's hope it works." Noah sunk to the ground. He looked up at the expectant Hassan.
"Sit," he ordered the standing man. "We've got stuff to do."
The sentinel bats surrounded Melissa and Ali Mehmet, bony fingers pressing into their arms and shoulders. They were standing outside a wooden house in a clearing full of sentinel bats. After sneaking around the forest, they'd spotted the black sorcerer Ali Mehmet had pointed him out in terror, and reluctantly, they'd followed him through the trees to this place. As he had walked through the courtyard, he made some shrieky sound to the sentinel bats while turning and pointing in their direction. The next thing they knew, Melissa and Ali Mehmet were being hauled into the clearing outside the house. The black sorceress stood on the steps of the house. The crystal skull moved slightly as it translated his sounds. "Well, tonight is a very busy night. It's a good thing we are creatures of the dark. There'd be no rest for us otherwise. I've no doubt you've come to ask me some questions. You might as well go ahead. All the visitors so far have done so." Melissa and Ali Mehmet looked at one another, each daring the other to speak. This was a creepy person. "Well? You've been hot on my tail, and now you've got nothing to say for yourselves?"
"We are looking for Nick," Ali Mehmet stammered breathlessly.
"Yes, Nick, my husband," Melissa ventured. "We thought you might be holding him. Nobody here is held against their will."
"But I was trapped here,"
Ali Mehmet protested.
"But not against your will," the black sorcerer insisted.
But Melissa said hesitantly, "All these people have surrounded us. You were following me. I wanted to give you the chance to ask me the questions that you wish to. You are free to leave now if you like."
"Oh.
Is Nick here in this in the Ashen Forest?"
"Yes.
The custodians have captured him.
So he is being held against his will."
Melissa was confused.
"No.
I tried to help him, but he insisted on doing things his way. He is now a prisoner of his thoughts."
"But I thought you said the custodians of him."
"They do."
Melissa felt exasperated.
"Can you tell me where they have him?"
"I can.
But there's no point you chasing after him, really.
You cannot do anything.
He's my husband.
I have to try."
"Go ahead then.
But remember, you can't win any battle without knowing your power.
You have to remember the keys.
Maybe the three of you can work it out together."
"Who are you?"
Melissa asked the black sorcerer, intrigued by his words.
"Are you a Horus Tasker?"
"I serve the dark side of the soul. Nothing more, nothing less. People who struggle with their power find their way here. If they choose their fears, they give themselves to me. I show them their worst nightmares, I am their worst fears. If they choose power, I'm of no use to them."
Melissa looked around her. She nodded.
"Yes.
I understand."
The black sorcerer sighed.
It was about time somebody understood. There was hope for the Horus Taskers after all.
Chapter 11 Finding the Halls of Amenti. Lara focused on the gates, eyes closed. She imagined them swinging open. She worked hard on this image in her mind, and when she opened her eyes again, after what seemed a very long time, the gates were still firmly shut.
"Ha ha.
Lara,"
Seth shouted.
"Keep going.
This is the spectacle of spectacles.
I must applaud you for trying so hard, but my dear, as I keep trying to suggest, you are no magician."
Lara was frustrated.
She'd tried so many ways to get these gates open. She'd even kicked them at one point. Seth had loved that. He'd had the nerve to gleefully offer to kiss her toes better.
Lara looked at the woman, who, while waiting patiently for Lara to work out the problem, gently rubbed at her large stomach.
Isis, Lara thought.
Isis, wife of Osiris.
Was she really pregnant?
Hadn't she already given birth to Horus, son of Osiris? Why was she pregnant now?
With what child? Lara sighed. This Horus Tasker thing was a real, Lara jumped up suddenly.
Hold on a minute. Isis.
Pregnant. Isis found the pieces of the murdered Osiris. A man murdered by Y, it was Seth, wasn't it?
Lara turned to face him now, and he looked at her suspiciously. He wasn't happy with the way she'd got up so suddenly.
That sort of movement smacked of a brainwave to him.
My goodness.
Isis.
Lara turned to the woman.
You're not really a person, as such, are you?
The woman beamed, nodding with encouragement.
You're the gateway. The story of Osiris is a riddle. A riddle of power. If we understand it, we understand our own power. Osiris didn't really come back to life, he went somewhere to the skies, to Orion, to the halls of Amenti, they're all the same thing.
I think you're talking gobbledygook, Seth interrupted, though he didn't sound convinced by his own words.
Lara ignored him.
Seth killed Osiris.
Seth, this man standing here, is a symbol of the side of human beings who are only interested in money, the side that does not care about other people and about love.
So Seth killed Osiris.
Osiris is power.
So our human greed killed our power.
Or should I say, we got so greedy that we forgot that we had power.
Now, we have people from other planets working for Seth, who make us so afraid that we allow ourselves to be slaves.
The gates, Lara, the gates.
Seth taunted.
You're telling nice, confusing stories, but you're not opening the gates.
Isis is the part of us that can get Osiris back.
There is a part of every human being that can bring back their power if they want to.
Isis is in every man, woman or child.
Isis is the imagination.
She uses her feelings and inner magic to make things happen.
All the things that we have done on this journey, the crystals, the imagining, the focusing, all of it is real.
It is the Isis inside of us that can do these things.
By using our Isis, we bring back our power.
So you, Isis, are the gates.
The child in your tummy shows us that we have to be creative with our imagination.
A noise made Lara turn.
The gates were open.
Suddenly, feeling tired again, Lara sunk to the floor. Her eyelids were heavy and she struggled to keep them open. She wanted to look up at the woman, but she was so Lara closed her eyes and slept. When she opened them again, the woman was gone.
Lara felt refreshed, more alive than ever before. She was more powerful.
She pulled herself up and turned to go through the gates.
Seth stood there, glaring.
I wouldn't go through, if I were you, he threatened.
He looked dangerous now.
His teasing was over.
You can't frighten me.
Lara replied.
There's nothing you can say to make me afraid.
Oh no?
No.
How about this, then?
I've got your father.
Walk through that gate and you won't see him again.
Lara froze.
Seth smiled.
Unfortunately for Seth, his smile thawed Lara's instant fear.
No.
You're just trying to scare me.
You're the one who is afraid because I'm going to open the halls of Amenti and you'll be finished.
You don't have anybody, otherwise you wouldn't be standing here.
Seth glowered darkly.
Then I'll somehow have to prove it, won't I?
He watched with dread as Lara entered the first of the gates to the halls of Amenti.
Whatever happened next, he could not allow her, or any one of the Horus Taskers for that matter, to get through the second gate.
He had better do something fast.
Yes.
He had better act very fast indeed.
Everything was changing, but he was not about to lose control.
The two troublemakers never returned.
Abdul-Bakr had waited for an eternity, but these Horus Taskers were a stubborn lot. If he knew anything at all, it was probably that the Rainford boy wanted to annoy the living daylights out of him and make him sit here endlessly. He was probably chuckling to himself right now, thinking of Abdul-Bakr twiddling his thumbs and waiting like a brainless chump for the two time wasters who'd only get back in their own sweet time. Time didn't seem to exist in these dimensions, or if it did, it was all messed up. Whether it was night or day depended on a person's mood or something. It was all so confusing. It infuriated him too, that he should be having to do all this stuff, charging about through the tunnels and goodness knows what else, all because of those meddlesome Rainfords. The world had been good, everything had been beautiful for thousands of years, and now, because of a bunch of nosy twerps, Abdul-Baqir jumped up. No. He wasn't sitting here a minute longer. He had to sort out his problems. Seth and the others had to be exterminated, killed, made good and dead so he could take over. Should he leave a lizard or two here by the caves? No. He'd leave the dark gatekeepers. He'd order a whole gang of the stinking fiends to keep guard. As soon as the two bumbling fools walked through the veil, they'd be torn to shreds and gulped down in milliseconds. Right. The machine. They had to find the right frequency band, the right sound to get them to the halls of Amenti. He wanted to make sure the gates were clear. He ought to put a few men there to scare off any Horus Taskers who tried to get through the gates. They'd probably never get through anyway, if history was anything to go by. Those white gatekeepers tested would be heaven-goers with stupid riddles, but usually the students were too dim-witted to get through. The trouble was, those pesky Horus Taskers were busting through into all sorts of places. It must be the Masters of Time who were giving those tricksters the answers to their tests or something. Whatever it was, Abdul-Baqir had better put a few scary individuals near the gates, just in case. Maybe he would succeed in scaring them off before they got anywhere near a white gatekeeper. He went outside to join the others. He gave out his orders and dark gatekeepers shuffled around the entrance of the caves to stand guard. Abdul-Baqir stood by while his lizard men continued to fiddle with the machine. He turned the dial in different directions, hoping to find the tone that would open up a portal. Something happened. The dial was pointing at Abdul-Baqir at one point when one of his cave watchers yelled the veil had changed color. A portal had opened. He turned off the machine and the veil returned to its original shade. Abdul-Baqir shouted for everyone to stand in the blue shimmering waves, and the lizard men crowded in clumsily while he stood at the machine. He turned it on again and ran for the veil as it changed color. Standing in the pool of colorful waves, a great noise, a rising squealing tone, made Abdul-Baqir and his men cover their ears and squeeze their eyes tightly shut. When it died down, they found themselves amongst a multitude of trees. What the Abdul-Baqir gasped as he took a few steps around him. He recognized the smell. This was not the place he was trying to get to. He turned to the others and gnashed his teeth in fury. They were in the ashen forest. Hassan crawled over to Noah, who was pulling damp leaves from his body. His ears still rang from the noise, but it was quieting down slowly. What happened? Hassan asked, not really expecting an answer from Noah. This place stinks, Noah complained. And what's with the spooky shrieking? And yellow flashes, Hassan said warily. Earlier, Bert sat in the blue void trying to hum on Noah's instructions, only to find that nothing had happened. Noah had insisted that if they could just find the right tone, it would open up a portal or something. Hassan had thought the idea was mumbo-jumbo, but didn't have the heart to say so. And besides, he didn't have any better ideas himself. It was during their useless efforts that they'd suddenly heard a horribly loud noise that rose until they'd had to cover their ears. And here they were, in a forest of some sort. Noah was obviously right about tones and portals, but they couldn't figure out quite what had happened. Come on, Noah, Hassan exclaimed as he got up. Let's find out where we are and what's next. Another shriek filled the night air, and bats' wings flapped furiously above them. Although they didn't feel cold, both of them shivered as they started to make their way through the eerie darkness. Melissa and Ali Mehmet stood in the trees, way back from the mountain-lined encampment. At least that's what it looked like to Melissa, an encampment. It was dark, and Nick was sitting on a stool surrounded by dim candles. Further away were a group of men, the custodians. Melissa recognized them from the Antiquities Committee, and she'd learned a lot more about their additional duties since this whole adventure had begun. The candles flickered and spat as wax tried to drown out the insistent candle wicks. Nick sat all trussed up with ropes, staring at his hands, no doubt wondering how he'd ended up in this place. Even further back than the custodians, Melissa spotted dark shadows lurking dark gatekeepers. We not move now, Melissa, Ali Mehmet whispered. We think first.
Think of what, Ali Mehmet?
Melissa hissed. She wanted to march over there now, and sort out these nasty characters who held her husband. We not help him with hands. He must think himself out of here.
What are you talking about?
Melissa challenged Ali Mehmet. Before I am captured. Nick cannot help me because I have to think myself out of there. Black sorcerer say so. So I think good things and now I am out.
I don't think so, Ali Mehmet. If we charge in there and make a distraction, Nick can run for it.
Then they catch you, Melissa.
Or me.
This work only if Nick think right.
This is test, Melissa.
I find out that we cannot help another person, we only must tell them what is right way to think.
Everyone choose the way they're thinking and they choose the things that happen to them.
Melissa looked at Ali Mehmet and sighed.
Maybe he was right, maybe.
How did you figure out the test, Ali Mehmet?
Melissa asked.
Sister Abigail.
She speak to me.
Maybe she speak to Nick.
I don't see how.
She's never spoken to him before.
The only time I have spoken to her unless hold on Ali Mehmet.
Maybe she can speak to him.
Melissa fumbled excitedly in her pockets and found the dreaming crystal. She held it up triumphantly.
I think we should ask her advice first,
yes.
Then we get this to Nick, Ali Mehmet interrupted.
She tell him like she tell me.
I hope so, Ali Mehmet, Melissa said happily.
I hope so.
Seth was fuming, and as he trudged through the trees, he kicked at a few tree trunks.
This was bad. Bad.
He had to stop the girl from going through to the second gate of the Halls of Amenti. How these Horus Taskers were getting through was anyone's guess. To pass through gates like these, the students in the past had to have heavy tests of their character. Were the Horus Taskers really finding the keys to the Halls of Amenti? He knew that the keys weren't actual keys, but that they were powerful ideas that made a human being understand themselves better. But how?
How did they pass the tests?
They were all over the tunnels, having all sorts of experiences, and if they succeeded and told the rest of the world, well, he could forget this whole idea of continuing to rule the Earth. He'd have to go back to his own planet, and that was all blown up to smithereens. Oh, wretched people. He couldn't let it happen. He had to scare the wits out of the girl, but the trouble was, she was getting too big for her boots. She wasn't having any of his scare tactics. Words alone wouldn't do any good. He had to somehow find a way for her to know for sure that Seth, king of the world, was holding her father hostage. That would stop her. Human beings were easy targets when it came to their family members. They loved them too much. And all those Horus Taskers were linked through family and friendship.
No.
It would be easy to terrify the lot of them. He just had to find a way to let her know he meant business. Dealing with the rest of them would be a piece of cake. Seth approached the filthy, disgusting home of the Dark Gatekeepers. There was no other safe place to hold their hostage, and let's be honest, beggars couldn't be choosers. He and the custodians were on their own in this whole mess. The Black Sorcerer was no help. He just kept talking in riddles, but the Dark Gatekeepers, well, handled right, were enough to terrify the devil himself. No one could escape that place. They'd die of the stench or of fright before they ever got out of there. There was light in the trees just before the mountain clearing. Now that was strange. This was Bat's paradise. They loved the dark, and those revolting creatures couldn't live with light. So what was going on? Seth was suspicious. Horus Taskers, perhaps. It was most likely something to do with that meddlesome crew. He crept in closer. Quietly he trod like a ghost, careful not to make any noise, and there they were. What Seth saw brought great joy to his heart. Suddenly in his mind, there was great hope. Once again, glory, victory. He could stop the girl once and for all. Stop those Horus Taskers from ever revealing anything to the rest of the world.
Yes.
The king of the world was back, and all was lost for those poor useless world-saving fools. Seth smiled a big smile. He was on top again. Abdul Bakr peered through the trees at the custodians. So this is where they were hiding out. The Black Sorcerer had told him where they were. That evil-looking creature didn't seem to know whose side he was on. He spoke in riddles that totally confused Abdul-Bakr. To be honest, he was glad to get out of there. Now he had to lie and wait. He had to wait for the right opportunity. There was a commotion. Someone was being dragged from the trees right opposite him across the clearing. Seth was there, and a woman. He fixed his eyes on her. The light wasn't great, just candles everywhere, no doubt to ward off the dark gatekeepers. They couldn't always be trusted to stay away from people. Even with orders, the light kept them at bay. Yes, it was definitely a woman. It was Rainford's wife. The custodians had dragged her to where her husband sat. The two of them had hugged and kissed, a pretty awful sight when Abdul-Bakr really thought about it. And then the two of them had got into a huge argument with Seth. Abdul-Bakr wasn't close enough to hear everything that was said. He'd just heard stuff about crystals and Sister Abigail, and Seth was giving a sermon on how the end was here for the Horus Taskers. Abdul-Bakr didn't foresee any problems. Seth could dispose of the Rainford couple, two less troublemakers for Abdul-Bakr to worry about. Then, the way would be clear. Abdul-Bakr would race in and take over once and for all. Ali Mehmet cried with joy as he hugged Sister Abigail. "Oh, I miss you, Sister Abigail. I miss you." "Me too, Ali Mehmet. I missed you too, but enough of the drama. You've got too much to do. You've got to get to Lara." "But why only I am here, Sister Abigail? Why not Melissa also?" Melissa and Ali Mehmet had called upon Sister Abigail using the dreaming crystal. They'd held it together and focused until the light had shone from its center and the Aboriginal woman had created a huge bubble of light that had surrounded them. They'd started speaking about Nick, but before they could have a meaningful conversation, people were suddenly rushing at them through the trees. Sister Abigail had yelled at them both to close their eyes and focus on her. Only Ali Mehmet did so and found himself in the Australian outback as he'd done so as a child a million times before. "Melissa is stubborn," Sister Abigail declared. She had other thoughts of rescue in her head. "She didn't listen to me." "Fortunately, you did." "But I tell Melissa," Ali Mehmet exclaimed wretchedly. "I tell her not to save him. He only can save himself. Lovebirds." She wanted to save her husband in all the wrong ways. "They'll figure out their test like you did. They're Horus Taskers. I have faith in them. Anyway. You've done well so far, Ali Mehmet. I'm proud of you. Your next step is to get through the first gate of the Halls of Amenti. If you pass the test, you'll find Lara. She'll need your help at this point. I'll get you to the first gate through my own portal. The rest is up to you." Sister Abigail looked down at the old man sitting in front of her. She'd known him all of his life and he'd always been afraid. Now when it counted, he was finding his courage. The lizard men stretched themselves out under the trees of the ashen forest and nodded off. It was tiring work, coming from another planet and working to overthrow the current leaders their new boss snooped about, waiting for the right moment to attack. But for now, well, there was nothing else to do but get some well-earned rest. Noah crept behind the trees where the lizard men slept, while Hassan kept his eye on Abdul-Bakr. Noah was glad of the moonlight. Even if there wasn't much of it, it was only half out, for a start, and also, some of the time, the bats swarmed the low skies above, leaving the forest in pitch black. The lizard men snoozed, some even snored. Noah looked around at all of them and then tiptoed to the one nearest him. This was dangerous. If the sleeping thing woke up, Noah would be someone's breakfast. That was if daybreak ever came in this terrible place. He reached down slowly to the lizard man's thigh, gently, ever so gently. He tugged at the flask tucked into a fold of skin. The green man snorted and twisted. Noah froze, his hand barely touching the bottle. The lizard man settled again and Noah slid the flask out skillfully, tucked it into the belt of his trousers and moved off towards the second sleeping lizard man. Abdul-Bakr's eyes popped backwards and forwards as he watched the scene ahead of him. He couldn't figure out what they were up to over there. Seth had this crystal thing in his hands and there was light spewing out everywhere. The dark gatekeepers had run for the caves, many of them making the most obscene noises. This light covered Seth and the couple, and other things were happening. Was there a black woman appearing in the picture? Hassan watched Abdul-Bakr. He and Noah had found him here after first coming across that awful black sorcerer. The strange half-bat half-man had laughed hysterically, saying this was the best adventure that had ever taken place in thousands of years. He said the Ashen Forest had turned into a throbbing train station overnight, with all sorts of characters turning up to hound each other. Everyone was looking for someone, he'd said. At least the strange fellow had told them where to find all the others. He and Noah hadn't realized who all the others were. They turned out to be Nick, Melissa, the custodians and their boss, and now this bunch of hoodlums, Abdul Bakr and his lizard men cronies. Noah had suggested they steal their tonic and bury it somewhere, then figure out later what to do about rescuing his parents. Without the tonic, the lizards would be easier to tackle in a fight, or so Noah said. He seemed to know about this shape-shifting lock. Abdul Bakr was looking over his shoulder. What was he looking at? Had he heard something? Hassan strained his ears to hear nothing. Abdul Bakr sniffed the air and his eyes sort of bobbed about in their sockets. He turned and headed back to where the lizard men lay sleeping. Lara stood at the second gate to the halls of Amenti. The heavy iron door was enormous. In actual fact, Lara couldn't see how it would open if she passed the test. That was, it had no hinges and neither was it two halves that swung open and shut. There was no meeting point at the center of the huge rectangular piece of metal. It looked as if it was just part of the wall itself, except it was metal, and the rest of the wall brand new brickwork. She stood there waiting for someone to appear. No one did. She didn't feel sleepy either. The land around the walls closest to the door was rich with herbs and flowers. The smell was glorious. Lara breathed the rich odors of nature deeply. A movement came from a thick waist-high bush near to the path she had traveled and now stood upon. Lara watched it closely and stood on tiptoe to see if there was anyone crouching behind it. She couldn't see anything, so she walked over to where she thought she'd seen the movement. There was not anyone there, but there was a powerful aroma, a heavy smell that reminded her of her mother's cooking. She was beginning to feel a little dizzy. Her eyes were playing with her. A figure was forming from the bush. Lara. A figure stood in the place of the bush. It was green with violet flecks. It didn't look like a person. It was just a form. Lara. Don't be alarmed. I am the spirit of the rosemary bush. My aroma helps you remember. It clears out the old ideas that you have about yourself. It clears the thoughts that tell you that you are not magical and not special. Poor human beings have forgotten they are special. I help your mind throw out all its fear. Just breathe, Lara. Breathe and clear out your head. I will fill your body and clean you like you would clean an old cupboard. Lara did as she was told. She breathed in the herbal aroma. Soon, she was sleepy. She went and sat by the great iron door and let her head fall onto her chest. She fell into a deep sleep. The black sorcerer looked at the crystal skull on his desk. It told him many things about the world. It told him what had been and what was happening now. It always spoke the truth. It did not know how to lie. The crystal skull knew all things, and now it told the sorcerer that the first gate to the halls of Amenti had been entered. Seth was fighting hard. He was a dangerous man and knew how to get what he wanted, but Seth had more than one enemy. His own people had turned against him. Never before had the world come so close to discovering its power. In the past, the students of the schools of Heliopolis had sometimes passed through the gates to the heavens. Not often though, but when they did, it was for their own gain. This time, a group of people, the Horus Taskers, brought into the world by the Masters of Time, were doing it so they could give everyone a chance to discover their power without the horrors of the tunnels. This idea was new, and it was frightening for the custodians. The black sorcerer went to his window and looked through up into the moonlit sky. How long? For how much longer would he be here? The crystal skull was not able to tell the future, for the future does not exist. There is only ever the past, or now. All things that were coming would depend on what happened now, in this moment. The man in the dark robes looked down into the courtyard at his people. They were here to serve those who needed them, and if they were no longer needed, then they would go back to where they came from. Lara's eyes opened to find Ali Mehmet staring down at her. He looked as he always did when he saw her, brimming with happiness, and his eyes full of tears. Morsala, Lara. I have found my precious child. He grabbed her arm and pulled her up. Lara hugged him until he pretended to gasp for breath. She laughed. You miss your old friend, Lara? Oh, Ali Mehmet. Lara cried. I'm so glad you're here. You made it too. Yes, my child. But mine is all twitchy now from the rosemary smell. Ali Mehmet wrinkled up his nose and wiggled it around, and Lara laughed again. It felt like old times. A rumbling noise behind caused them to turn their heads. The great iron door was moving. It was sliding from one wall into the other, disappearing into brickwork until it had gone altogether. Lara and Ali Mehmet stared at the crystal path that led up to the doors of the great halls. "All that you encounter begins within," a voice said. They turned away from the entrance to face a man in a white robe with shoulder-length brown hair. Lara recognized him as one of the White Brotherhood. "All that you encounter begins within," Balthazar repeated, smiling. Before Lara or Ali Mehmet could answer the man, their ears started ringing. Sister Abigail's voice was loud and it wasn't coming from inside their ears. A picture was forming in front of all three of them. They could hear Sister Abigail speaking, but they saw Seth. The picture loomed in front of them. It was as if the horrid man was right here with them. Lara knew that he couldn't hurt them though, because he could only observe. "Lara, Ali Mehmet," came Sister Abigail's voice. "I have a visitor for you. In fact, a few visitors, thank you," boomed Seth's voice. He was grinning like a demon at Lara. He looked at Ali Mehmet. "You too. I would have thought you too old for this sort of thing. Seems I'm wrong, though, eh? Can't you leave us alone?" Lara shouted. "You're actually getting on my nerves. We're here with Balthazar. We're going to pass through the second gate." "I shouldn't bother, my dear. Are you still trying to frighten me?" "I'm getting bored with," Seth smiled as the image of her father and mother appeared next to him. "You were saying, Lara?"
"Mum.
Dad.
Oh my goodness. What's happening? Where are you?"
Lara stared at them aghast. She was confused, overjoyed to see them, but with Seth? What on earth was going on?
"Move away from the gate, Lara,"
Seth shouted before her parents could answer her. "I wouldn't go through if I were you. There's too much to lose, wouldn't you say? As for you, old man, I think you've got too much sense to do anything stupid."
"What?"
Lara demanded. "What are you going to do to them?" She felt panic rise in her body. She could not bear the thought of anyone hurting her parents.
"What do you think I'm going to do? Do I look like a kind old teddy bear? I'm going to kill them, that's what.
Unless, of course, you walk away from that gate and forget that any of this spectacular drama ever happened." A hand rested on her shoulders. Lara turned to Balthazar. She'd forgotten about him for the moment.
"What does it mean, Lara?"
Balthazar asked her.
"What does what mean?"
Her eyes darted back to her parents. They were trying to say something, but Seth was threatening them.
"Focus, Lara," Balthazar insisted gently. "Are you still there, girl? Don't these people mean anything to you?"
Seth's voice was menacing. "All that you encounter begins within. It will help you if you understand what it means. Focus on what is important."
"But my parents are important.
Ali Mehmet, what should I do?" The old man came to her side and took her hand. "One of the keys, Lara, is this. We cannot help any person. When we try to do this, we let them believe they have no power. We must tell them they have power to change the things in their lives, and we can explain how, but we must not do anything for them.
Your mother, father, they must find this key and they will be free.
Walk away, Lara. The dark gatekeepers are on hand. They're slobbering at the thought of biting into these two miserable creatures."
Seth smirked as he spoke.
"Lara," Ali Mehmet pleaded, "think all that you encounter begins within. It mean that what we thinking we creating, no? Your mama, baba, they must think good thing, not bad thing. You, Lara, think about power. Then you win. Don't get involved with riddles, Lara. They'll only get your parents into trouble.
Lara,"
Melissa yelled at the top of her voice. "Go through the gates." One, Lara watched, horrified, as one of the custodians grabbed her mother and pushed her to the floor.
"Don't let fear hold you back,"
her father managed to shout, before he too was knocked to the ground. Lara was frantic. She looked at Balthazar. He smiled encouragingly. Lara looked at Ali Mehmet.
"Let's do it," she said.
"We'll go through the gate. But first, let me calm myself." She closed her eyes to the sound of Seth's taunts and threats. She was afraid, but she had to now find her sense of power again. This, she thought, was going to be the hardest thing she'd ever had to do, but she had to take the risk. There was too much at stake. Horror-struck, Abdul-Bakr stared at the boy. His belted waistline was stuffed with flasks and his arms and hands full. His men lay on the floor of the forest, some up against trees, fast asleep, snoring as if there was not a terrible battle going on. Noah looked at Abdul-Bakr, equally astonished. Where had Hassan got to? He appeared suddenly, in the shadows behind Abdul-Bakr, and before Abdul-Bakr could voice his absolute fury, Hassan had grabbed him around his neck and covered his mouth with a large hand. Abdul-Bakr's protests were muffled as Hassan dragged him back to his peeping spot. The smaller man wrestled and bit at Hassan's hand. Hassan yelled out and yanked his hand away. Abdul-Bakr leapt away, his face red with rage. Abdul-Bakr didn't have the words to say how he felt. His ears were steaming, and he reached for his tonic. Hassan suddenly realized what was happening, bellowed at the top of his voice to try to startle Abdul-Bakr, and lunged for the flask. Abdul-Bakr shrieked with astonishment at the noise, but managed to jump out of the way, and Hassan fell flat on the ground. The racket woke one of the lizard men, who leapt to his feet upon seeing Noah. Noah ran for the trees and threw the flasks as far as he could into the brush just as the lizard man gained on him. Fortunately for Noah, the green man tripped over one of his sleeping companions. Their shouts were enough to raise the dead. Noah turned and headed in Hassan's direction. Hassan pulled himself up as Noah ran straight into Abdul-Bakr. The man grabbed the boy by the scruff of his neck and tried to yank him to the floor. Noah held his body over Abdul-Bakr's, and the two of them went flying into the mountain clearing. They tussled on the floor, each trying to push the other's face with their free hand. They rolled around in the damp earth until the brightness of lamplight stopped them in their muddy tracks. Three custodians stood over them. Abdul-Bakr stared up in the lamplight. His face had changed color. He was white, white as death. Nick and Melissa looked at each other. Their eyes were alight. Seth's eyes were bulging. He had dropped the dreaming crystal and the picture of Lara had disappeared. He looked demonic. He grabbed his tonic quickly and swigged it in large gulps. He couldn't believe what he saw. A muddy, pasty-faced Abdul-Bakr, his arms pinned back by two of the custodians, gazed up at him. His face said it all. He was guilty of betrayal, and terrified of his punishment. Behind him was a young man, the Rainford boy. Presumably he looked sulky and rude, not a bit frightened. Before anyone could speak, a stampede of lizard men entered the clearing, all charging for the group. The custodians, though dumbfounded by the sight, acted quickly and ran forward to meet them. A massive brawl took place. Abdul-Bakr, his arms free and suddenly filled with nerve and guts, ran for Seth and leapt at him, clawing at his face like a mad animal. They fell about the floor kicking and punching. At one point, they even pulled at each other's hair. Not that Abdul-Bakr had much, but his ears were yanked in all sorts of directions. Nick struggled up from the ground. The ropes that had once been tight around him fell about his feet. He looked at Melissa. "Let's get out of here," he shouted. Melissa grabbed the dreaming crystal from the floor and ran with Nick, heading for the trees. Noah saw his parents up ahead and yelled at them to follow him. They turned to head off after their son. He led them to Hassan, who was standing watching the fisticuffs with fascination. The clearing was crawling with green slime. The lizard men had no tonic whatsoever, and the custodians had finished off their very short supplies. The only brawlers left were Seth and Abdul-Bakr. They'd stopped fighting and were both sipping their tonic and looking around them in horror as the last of the slime disappeared into thin air. "Now for the task of getting to Lara and Ali Mehmet," Nick declared to the group standing before him. "I think this will help," Melissa smiled, holding up the dreaming crystal. The four of them studied it for a moment, and then together, clasped their hands around it. They were off to the gates of the Halls of Amenti. Chapter 12: The Magic of the Mind. All six of them stood before Balthazar. He beckoned for them to follow him as he made his way to the rosemary bush and summoned its spirit. By breathing in, they began the journey of remembrance. Balthazar then led them through the iron gate to the great halls of Amenti. They all looked at him quizzically. "Didn't they have to take a test to have come this far?" Balthazar explained. "Means that you have enough sense of your own power to enter the great halls. The phrase "all that you encounter begins within" this is part of a key that you must clearly understand for you to completely own your power. Once this key is realized within you, the halls will reveal Osiris. The great doors opened and gold light flooded out from the halls of Amenti. The Horus Taskers stepped into a vast marbled building. A turquoise mosaic pathway led to a central point way in the distance, and from the center seemed to go off in various directions to different mirrors. "This is the great mirrored hall, Horus Taskers, where you will discover the secrets of the human soul. Walk the path now to the center." They did as instructed and found themselves standing at different points of a circle. Each of them had to walk their own path to a mirror and follow the orders given by Balthazar. At the mirror, each of the Horus Taskers gazed in at their own images. The light in the hall dimmed slowly and they continued to stare into the eyes of their own reflections. Soon, the light was extremely low and very gradually the images in the mirrors began to change. The Horus Taskers kept their eyes fixed to their own eyes in the mirror while facial and body features transformed. Balthazar's voice, filling the air with quiet power, began speaking, "Gaze, Horus Taskers, into the depths of your own soul and take the journey of the human self." The first image was like that of an angel. It was a golden being, a woman with a halo and white robes, the divine self. "Horus Taskers, this is who human beings once were." After holding for a while, the image faded, then something darker was forming, a man. It was Seth. "The negative self, Horus Taskers, the self who gave in to greed, selfishness, bullying, this is what you became. Through choice." The image shifted once more and the Horus Taskers again looked upon themselves. "The self you see now is both divine and negative. What you choose to be is up to you. You must not judge the custodians, for they are a part of you. For them to rule your world, you have to allow it by being your negative self. They are here because you have chosen greed, selfishness and powerlessness. Should you choose to be your divine self, they have no power over you. Turn now, Horus Taskers, and keep your back to the mirror." The Horus Taskers turned and faced the center of the room. "I request that Lara come to stand in the circle at the center." Lara walked to the circle and stood there as a bubble, a huge sparkling bubble, just like the ones that people blow from soapy water, rose from the floor. This bubble didn't bob around unsteadily and pop into the air as the soapy ones did. This one floated gracefully and was a perfectly shaped ball of light. It came to a stop in the air above Lara and the other Horus Taskers. "O great orb of the Grandfather Sun, show our sister Lara and the Horus Taskers the great key to human magic." The center of the orb first flashed a series of tiny silver stars that glittered and twinkled like the sparkle as Lara loved setting light to every year on bonfire night. And then images began to form right in the middle of the perfect sphere. Lara recognized herself in the pictures. She was standing in her mirror at home. From her body, very faint waves of energy were moving outwards from her center. They moved like water does when a pebble is dropped into it. She could see what she was wearing and she could see perfectly well all the things in her room. In fact, when she looked closely, all the things in her room had faint waves of energy coming off them. In the orb, she was younger than she was now, and as she peered into the mirror, she frowned and crossed her arms furiously. "I hate you." She started shouting, "I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. Do you remember this time in your life, Lara?" "Yes, I do," Lara answered, still mesmerized by the images within the orb. "My parents were cross with me because I told them about Sister Abigail and the dream time. I'd told them many things and this time, they were angry and said I was making everything up. I hated myself for seeing things that other people didn't. Yes. Now watch what happens to the body when we get upset." The vision of Lara in the orb began to glow red. Red waves of energy moved from her body in stronger pulsating waves. The waves reached right out into the world and beyond to what seemed like infinity. The vision switched to a school scene. It was the playground at school. Oh yikes. There was Susie Spencer. Lara didn't like seeing Susie Spencer in the orb. Susie was the school bully. Everyone just hated her. All the school kids played. Some bounced balls to each other and others played hopscotch. Some were chasing their friends around and jumping on each other's backs. All of them had waves of energy coming off them. So did the school building and the plants and the school gates. It was weird, everyone was playing with people who had the same color waves.
Yes.
The waves all had different colors and the colors were so different to anything she'd ever seen before. So many different kinds, so many variations.
Wow.
Lara was impressed. Susie was the only one not playing, besides Lara. Lara was standing apart from her friends watching them hop around on numbered squares. Their colors were sort of orange-yellow. They were the same she could remember not wanting to play, feeling irritable with everyone after her argument with her parents. She was cross with Sister Abigail and cross with herself for seeing things. Her wave colors were red and so were Susie's. Susie walked over to where Lara was standing and started taunting her, calling her mean names and poking at her arms and chest. When Lara told her to just shut up, Susie landed her fist square on Lara's right eye. Of course, there followed a commotion and a teacher came to haul Susie off for the umpteenth time to the headmaster and for detention. You were both sending off the same wave energies. The wave energies contain information about what it is you are thinking. People of the same thought pattern stick together because energy likes to come together. It is magnetic. Do you understand?
Yes.
All the kids playing together had the same colors. I suppose the colors match the way we feel?
That's correct.
Your colors shift and change all the time, but people have an underlying color, one that comes from them all the time. It is deeper down inside of you, not so clear as the emotional colors. Susie must be red inside and out. She's always looking for a fight. She's always red because she does not like herself. She has had life experiences that have made her angry all the time. Now, that anger is all she ever feels. She becomes angry to see happy people because she doesn't remember how to feel happy herself. So, whoever hates themselves that day will get Susie for company. Lara clearly understood that human experiences give people ideas about things, and those ideas travel on energy waves from our bodies. People who think alike have similar colors and so they attract each other magnetically. So if we think bad things or good things, we are always with people who are the same as us, whether we want to admit it or not. And, sometimes the TV or magazines and books give us new ideas, new ways to look at things in the world. When we start to think a bit differently, that is the way we draw new experiences to us without realizing it. We might watch bad things on TV that make us have some silly ideas, or we might read a good book that makes us more sympathetic towards others. Either way, we change our ideas, and then we change our experiences. We find ourselves in situations, good or bad, according to how we think, and according to the changing ideas that make our personalities. And knowing all of this is what makes magical people and non-magical people. Lara exclaimed. Ponder this, all that you encounter begins within. As Lara walked back to her spot by the mirror, the orb slowly disappeared and the light in the great hall brightened. As it did so, the Horace Taskers found that the hall looked different, the mirrors were gone. Before them was the strangest sight, there were many people present, they looked like lions. In the center of the great hall now, was the Sphinx, or at least it looked like the one near the Great Pyramid. This one was just as huge and perfectly formed. The lion's body with the man's head around them were people. They were humans with lion's features. They were golden-haired, beautiful creatures with perfect chiseled faces. Selene was amongst them. She stepped forward. Horace Taskers, we are blessed that you have reached us. You have finally completed the circle. The Horace Taskers looked at each other.
The circle?
Noah asked. He was transfixed by these beings. You started here, with us. You left through these doors into the astral and were birthed into human bodies, bearing our DNA. It was your task to help human beings to remember their beginnings. You were born into human bodies to help them realize their absolute power. Being in human bodies, it is difficult for you to remember who you are as Horace Taskers. We had to wait for a time that we could activate the prophecy of Osiris. It was planned so that you would have to do this journey of remembering so you could tell other human beings how to find their power. I'm not sure I understand it all, Hassan said. What happened to the human race? Once upon a time, Human beings were divine beings, but with time and lots of different experiences, many developed the negative self. The human race became divided into divine beings and negative beings. Soon, from the skies, came visitors who saw that most human beings had become greedy and selfish, and they took advantage of this. These visitors were very clever and very evil. They had blown up their own planet through their greed and selfishness, and here, they found people who were greedy and selfish like them. The visitors made slaves out of humans without them even knowing what was happening, and today things have not changed. So these visitors were basically aliens who visited the Earth? Noah asked, his eyes wide.
Yes.
Visiting different planets is a normal thing in most of the universe, just as it is normal to visit different countries. Visitors don't come in spaceships, though. They come through portals in the Earth or sky and travel ships. No one travels through space as you know it. Seth's people just let you think they do to keep you thinking that traveling to different planets is too difficult or even impossible. That way, you will not think about leaving the planet and living elsewhere. In your world now, Seth's people do not allow visitors to come, and they do not allow humans to know of such a possibility. The portals are closed. They want the Earth to themselves.
So who are you, exactly?
Lara asked. We were the original Earth people. There were some of us who did not give in to greed and selfishness. We chose our divine selves. We tried to tell our brothers and sisters that they could also choose a better path, but they would not listen.
Why do you look half lion, half human?
Noah inquired. We once looked like you. When most humans followed their greed and selfishness, we had no choice but to leave. We could not force others to think like us, and the world became a terrible place to live. So we went through the portals to Orion. These people are great divine beings. They are great lions like this Sphinx. We became one with them. So now, we look similar. So what is it that you do here now with us? Melissa was fascinated by this story of ancient human history. It has always saddened us that our people changed in this terrible way. It was worse when we saw what Seth's people did and still do. So we tried to help by setting up our own portals by building the Great Pyramids. All pyramid structures that are mathematically perfect are portals. The Sphinx, and the many temples that we built were hieroglyphs for you to read. The area you call Egypt was a divine land. Only the divine beings lived there until we left for Orion. In fact, we didn't live there all the time. We came back and forth through the portals to help human beings who wanted to change. We built temple schools so that people who wanted to learn how to change back into divine beings could be taught by us. But Seth's people soon found out what we were doing and closed the portals. They blocked up the Great Pyramid so that its inside was no longer mathematically perfect. But why is there no history of this? Nick asked curiously. In some of the temples and in many books, we left the stories of your true history. Thoth, the crossing guard of the great celestial waterway, was the divine being who came back many times to write of human history. Many of these books were burned by Seth's people. We also made sure that we left the stories in complicated hieroglyphs so that Seth would not understand them. Even today, people have not understood the stories within the stories. So the history of humanity is still in Egypt, written in hieroglyphs on the walls of temples and tombs, but Egyptologists are yet to understand them. Seth's people changed your ideas about human history. They wanted you to believe that you have no power, so they destroyed most of the knowledge of it. They did not want you all to wake up one day and change your minds about living this kind of life. They needed you to believe that you depend on them, on their governments, on their whole way of life. They made you believe that you had no imagination and no way to have magic in your life. So who are the masters of time and the White Brotherhood? Noah asked, yes, why have all these different people like White Eagle and Sister Abigail helped us? Lara was also eager to know. We are all here to try to tell human beings that they have choices about how to live. There are divine beings all over the universe who care about human beings and what has happened to them. It is only human beings who do not seem to care much about themselves. The Masters of Time and the White Brotherhood are also Orions, but they have different types of bodies. Sister Abigail and White Eagle are from tribes who originally came from the Pleiades star system. These stars are sisters of the Earth. In this world are many people from different places in the universe. We work together as one family to assist our enslaved brother and sister human beings. So now we are here, what's next? Nick asked. Now that you have found your way here, you have completed this circle, and now that you have discovered the keys to your power, you can tell other human beings, but first you have to give us all the keys. When this task is done, you will meet Osiris. Chapter 13. The 12 Keys of Amenti. The Horus Taskers stood just outside a huge circle of shiny polished black granite rock. It was divided up with gold lines to form what looked like pie pieces. Each section was equal in size and 12 of them made up the circle. The Horus Taskers were ready. As each of them spoke up, giving two keys, gold writing formed on a section of the circle. It was recording the keys of Amenti. Nick began, "We create our reality with our thoughts." As he spoke these words, he remembered Ali Mehmet lying in his cage, thinking terrible things and creating a frightening world for himself. It was only when he chose more positive thoughts that he was able to get out of his cage. The way that we see the world, and the feelings that we have, fear, anger, love, are all there because of our thoughts, and we choose those thoughts when we think of all the good things that we want to happen to us, and keep these happy thoughts in our minds at all times, we feel happy and positive about life. Eventually these good things happen to us, and it is the same with bad things. It is all our own choice. Nick knew what he preferred to create, declaring the second key. Nick said, "The world is a mirror of the way that we think." Stepping back, he realized that Lara's experience with Susie Spencer was a good example, and he and Ali Mehmet had ended up captured and surrounded by evil beings because they were thinking negative things. The world around them really was just a mirror of what was going on in their own heads. Nick could now see that many people in his life were good mirrors, and some were bad mirrors. At least now he knew that all the bad things he had experienced, he could change by making himself think positive thoughts as much as possible, and also by believing in himself and following all the keys of Amenti. And if he really wasn't sure whether his thoughts were good or bad, all he had to do was look at what was going on all around him in his life. Stepping forward, Melissa continued, "We have the power of choice. We can choose good thoughts or we can choose bad thoughts." Melissa understood that nobody makes us think anything. We choose what to think, even if it doesn't feel that way. Sometimes often people are around us who say mean and nasty things and we flare up in anger, or we just feel bad inside. We must remember though that we have choices. If the things they say really are not true, we can choose to believe that we are good and special and ask those people who insist on their negative opinions to please leave us alone. If we realize that the things they say are actually true, we can choose to change the way that we are and become more loving, honest people. We must also accept other people's choices. Melissa realized that we must all allow people to choose their own way of doing things. You do not have to make them do things your way, even if you think you are right. What is right for you is not always right for others. Or, sometimes people simply need to make mistakes so that they can see things for themselves. You should tell people one time only what you have experienced, but if they choose to go ahead and do their own thing, you must respect their choices. Noah went next, "Always follow your own inner voice. Don't let others tell you what to do." Noah remembered that he always used to follow what his friends did, even when he knew inside something was not right. Often, he would end up in trouble because he didn't listen to the voice inside of himself that urged him to do the right thing. So many of us are like this. We get a feeling inside of us to do something, and then we do not listen to it, because we do not trust ourselves. We listen instead to somebody else because we think other people have the right answers. Speak your truth at all times. Noah sometimes lied to people. Not just ordinary lies about what he had been up to, but deeper lies, such as what he really thought about things that happen in life. Sometimes people have beliefs about things that other people do not have, but they do not tell other people. They pretend to be like everyone else. He knew now that when someone lies, it means that they are afraid and do not know their power. They are afraid that people will reject them. When we live honestly and follow all the keys of Amenti, we are powerful and people see that power because they see we are not afraid to be ourselves. Lara followed Noah, "Always trust yourself and believe in your own experiences.
Don't let others tell you your magical life is not real. Lara used her own life as an example. She had been so miserable at times, when her parents, brother and friends had not believed her about Sister Abigail and her experiences. Sometimes, she wondered if she was a silly girl just like they had told her. She started to believe she was weird, crazy or just plain stupid. Now, she knew that other people were not right at all. She now believed that everything was true, simply because it was her own experience and she didn't have to prove a thing to others. Many people in the world have strange experiences, but they believe that there is something wrong with them. All it takes is for all people to have trust in themselves for them to know that they are special and privileged to experience different things. Always do what you believe to be the right thing. Never do something that is not true to you just so that people will like you. Lara had learned that her father and her son had been afraid to do the right thing in their lives, in their jobs. Sometimes, when they knew that other Egyptologists were wrong, they didn't say anything in case the others said bad things about them. So many people live their lives this way. There are times when we have to tell people what we really think about them or their ideas, but do not in case they dislike us. We end up being followers of other people because we do not have the courage to do what we believe to be right. Ali Mehmet came up next. He spoke slowly. Keep your mind in the present. Let go of the past. The future does not exist. You are creating it in the present with your thoughts. Ali Mehmet knew he was guilty of keeping his mind in the past. He never married Helen because his mother and father had not been happy together. He always remembered his unhappy life as a child because his parents hated each other. He had chosen to believe that marriage was a bad thing because of his parents' experience. So really, Ali Mehmet was making choices in the present based on past experiences. Instead of thinking about how happy he and Helen were and would be together, he thought about his parents' past experiences. And so, he had robbed himself of happiness. He knew now that he just had to think of today and wipe the past clean from his mind. It didn't matter what happened way back then. It only mattered what happened now. A lot of people live in the past without realizing it. We should always question why we make certain choices in our lives. Are we doing things because of our past experiences? Or are we fully here, in the present, thinking good things and making totally new experiences? This next key was dear to Ali Mehmet. Know that every being in the universe is connected. They are part of our new magical experiences. Respect and love all of life and you will always have nature as your friends. Ali Mehmet learned this from Sister Abigail. He knew he could speak to plants, animals and all sorts of creatures with his mind and his heart if he wanted to. Only humans had forgotten that we are all connected, and so never communicate with nature. When we love nature, we are good to it. We do not throw litter on its beautiful soil, and we do not hurt the land with our deep digging just so we can wear diamonds and precious metals. We love it as we love our friends, and in return, it gives its beauty back to us. We also get to know about the lives and the realities of totally different beings so totally different from ours. What an education! Hassan came on last. We must only help others by speaking of their great power and teaching them how to use it. We must never do things for people that make them believe they are powerless. Hassan understood that human beings get very confused about the way that we should help each other. Sometimes in school, we help our friends by giving them the answers to tests, when this is not the right way to assist them. Giving the answers only makes them lazy. If we help them by showing them how to study, or assist them by helping them with their areas of difficulty, then we help their minds to grow. We must not give the kind of help that makes people lazy. We must give the help that makes people grow strong and powerful with their minds. Hassan knew that from now on, whenever someone asked him for help, he was going to ask these questions: will it make them weak, or will it make them powerful? Then he would choose the kind of help he gave others according to what the answers were. The next key had been a special learning point for Hassan in this adventure. Use your imagination. It is the key to traveling and experiencing things in other dimensions. It is one of the greatest powers we have. This adventure was the proof of that. The human mind is more powerful than any human being knows. It does not appear to be strong, because human beings do not use the power of focus anymore. Humans just let things happen and then get happy or sad about it. They don't seem to take much part in creating what they want. When they start focusing on the things they desire, they are surprised at the magic that happens. Hassan hoped that this journey would teach children to hold on to their imaginations and use it right into adulthood. Then, they could live any kind of life they wanted, the 12 keys given, the writing on the great granite circle glowed in his golden glory. The Horus Taskers watched in great wonderment as the circle began to sink through the floor of the great hall. It sunk lower, lower, until a great light poured from the ground. The 12 sections of the circle moved from their center and slid back, revealing a vast opening from which an immense gold light rose. It entered the great hall and held its great awesome presence. Osiris Hassan breathed. I am Osiris. I am your power. I am the power from which everything in the universe is made. I am the place that everything returns after it dies. I am within you. Your imagination speaks to me and I create what your imagination commands. I am you. I am nature. I am everything. The Horus Taskers understood it all now. The halls of Amenti are the hieroglyph for the human soul. The halls are not a place, they are the soul of every creature in the universe. Inside every human being is Osiris, the great power. This is the story that must be told. The gold light of Osiris began a slow descent as the Horus Taskers watched. The 12 tablets of the circle moved back into place, revealing the inscribed keys of Amenti. Gold dust began falling from the vast skies of the halls of Amenti. The Horus Taskers held out their arms and allowed the love of their great ancestors to fill their hearts and souls as the halls disappeared. Melissa felt a very different presence around her. It was a strange being. A divine being. Suddenly she knew what it was. It was the story of Osiris. The story had lived a lonely, isolated existence for thousands of years. It had sought a storyteller who would allow this tale of truth to be told. It is an important story that will help the children of the world. They have to learn the truth, for only they would have the courage to change things. This story slipped into Melissa's heart and she held it there, ready. She'd call the story the Rainbow Bridge, in honor of the children of Rainbow's End. Soon they would be back in our hearts and souls. Melissa would make sure of it. Epilogue. 1 year later, Ali Mehmet's wedding in Cairo. The following year was a huge affair. The press was there, snapping the happy couple, and later, when Ali Mehmet saw he and Helen's photograph in the newspapers, he was well pleased. He looked very handsome indeed. And at his age. Lara, in her frilly pink bridesmaid's dress, popped wedding cake in her mouth. Noah poked at the cake on his plate, wrinkling his nose up in disgust. You look like the icing on this cake, dressed like that, Noah moaned. Bloody weddings. They should be banned, especially after a person reaches a certain age. I thought Ali Mehmet had more sense than to get involved in a fiasco like this. I think Helen looks beautiful, murmured Lara, her mouth full. She needs her head testing, that's what, Noah went on. Ali Mehmet will drag her off to all sorts of places with that imagination of his. He never knows when to stop these days. She should have stayed put in her rainy English village, safe and sound, and nutty as a fruitcake. The children watched as newspaper journalists surrounded Melissa. She had recently released her children's book, The Rainbow Bridge, and it had reached the bestseller lists very quickly. Even adults seemed to be intrigued by it. The journalists were asking Melissa their favorite question: was the story actually true to life, all of it? She answered in the way she always did, with a secretive smile. Sister Abigail told you in the beginning, didn't she? That all stories are alive, that they are true. Sometimes the characters are made up, but the story is real. You just have to learn to read the truth underneath. Cameras flashed at all the wedding guests, and especially at the two distinguished Egyptologists, Hassan and Nick, who had shocked the world with a wild story of their adventures using the white powder of gold. At first, few people had believed the stories. But then it was scientifically tested, and more than that, one or two scientists had been horrified to observe Nick and Hassan walk through walls after swallowing the stuff with water. The supply that Nick and Noah had carried soon ran out, what with all the tests, but the powder was now being made by all sorts of people trying to follow the recipes given on the ancient scrolls. They couldn't get close to making the real thing, though their thoughts were of greed and selfishness. And well, what they created just didn't even look like the real stuff. They sold quite silly versions of it on the internet, and in health shops, but nothing they made was ever effective. Would humans ever learn?
Until they followed the keys of Amenti, no power could ever be gained from external things. Power only belonged within.
Lara put her hand in her pocket. The dreaming crystal was warm. Sister Abigail was here, on the Dreamtime level, with all of them. All they had to do was see her with a third eye. In Lara's other pocket was a small diary in which she'd recorded a story that White Eagle had told her recently. It seemed to capture everything she had learnt on her adventures through the dimensions amidst the festival light of the flashing cameras. She took out the diary and read her favorite words again. Once, a long, long time ago, the Creator gathered all his creatures together and said, "I want to play a game. I want to hide something from humans and see what it takes for them to find it. It must be a place you feel they would never look. It is an important secret. It is the knowledge that they create their own reality." The eagle said, "Give it to me, I will take it to the highest mountain." The Creator said, "No. One day they will go there and they will find it." The salmon said, "I will place it at the bottom of the sea." "No. They will go there too." The buffalo said, "I will bury it on the Great Plains." The Creator said, "They will cut into the skin of the earth and find it even there." Grandmother Mole, who lives in the breast of Mother Earth and who sees with spiritual eyes, said, "Put it inside of them, in their hearts and in their souls. They will never bother to look there." And the Creator said, "It is done." The end.